This episode is brought to you by Button Down, the easiest way to start, send, and grow your email newsletter.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat. I'm Will Vincent, joined by Carlton Gibson. Hello, Carlton.
Hello, Will.
And I'm very happy to be joined by my JetBrains colleague, Roman Pronsky. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Will. Hi, Carlton. Hi, everyone. Happy to be here.
Hi, Roman. Thanks for coming on.
So I wanted to have you on for a long time because you are executive director of PHP, which we'll talk about that, but also very involved just in the PHP world, which we in Python Django can get a bit insular and not be aware of, you know, what Laravel and all these other things are doing. So want to talk to you about your background and then web stuff. Oh, Carlton, you have another agenda?
Well, no, I'm just like half of our guests, it seems, and I'm pretty sure half of our audience, certainly the older ones, got a start with PHP, right? It was like, well, how did you get into it? Well, I was doing PHP and then I found Django later on. So, I mean, that was back probably PHP 4, PHP 5, back in the day. It's come on a long way like that. So one thing I'm really interested to talk to you about is how the language has evolved.
Oh, yeah.
Over that time. And then the other thing I'm sure Will will top on is like we're always looking over the fence at the different frameworks, and particularly Laravel. It's got a great marketing effort. And we're always like, oh, we should do more in that space. So, you know, talk about those kind of things would be amazing.
Absolutely,
go on, Will. Anyway, I just wanted to say that.
And the audience can't see, but you're a bit younger than we are. So I'm not going to assume you were using PHP and Django 25 years ago, but maybe you were. So maybe that's a way to ask. How did you get into programming and find your way to PHP?
Yeah, I'm 37 actually. So
oh dang,
yeah,
good for you.
I must get your facial cream.
Yeah, maybe we should talk like about skincare routine. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah,
I'm kidding. I got into programming in high school. I started with Turbo Pascal back then. It was just something available on our school class machines, that and GTA 1, if anyone remembers that game, like with a top down view. So I was a big fan of that one back then, and I was started programming this Turbo Pascal, and then I studied math in my uni, and one of my teachers was organizing a conference for math. And she asked me, hey, can you program website for us? I was like, okay, I need to Google what they do for websites. Because I was using...
Yeah, of course.
I was using C mostly and Java for all the stuff at the university. And I opened PHP and I was shocked how easy it was to create a website. And I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. I was looking for a job after my uni. I wanted to do math, but I guess I was not very I liked shiny things and just talking to people, and I was not like maybe introverted enough to do deep math. I was looking for a job, and I found a position vacancy for PHP developer, and I applied there. They took me, although the only website I built was this conference website. And that's how I started with PHP, and I stick with that for 15 years. I was doing other languages during time. So I was working as a software engineer in different roles, and I used Python quite a lot, not Django, but just for APIs. And JavaScript, obviously, both on server side and front end. Java a little bit. Also, once I had to do Salesforce development, so I discovered that they actually have their own language, sort of like built maybe or originated from Java, but it's their own ecosystem, totally different. So I had to do that and learn that. So I had quite a
What the listeners didn't see is the way you sort of rubbed your temples in pain as you recalled that Salesforce game that you had to do.
I'm saying Salesforce and my eyes just going over the blinking, because it was I mean, it was a job. Like I had to quickly get into it and understand what's going on there. So I was like, okay, I will do that. No problem. But I really loved PHP all that time. So whenever I was like away from PHP for a short time, I was like, I want to go back to PHP. For some reason, I was just in love with PHP. And ever since.
One thing you said there was that you picked it up, you started playing with it, and you were like, oh, wow, it's so easy to get the web page up or the website up. And it's just there. And that's one of my lasting, you know, I started off at PHP. It's one of my lasting memories of it really was like, yeah, let's just no nonsense. Let's get it up. Let's, you know, include the header. Let's include the footer. Let's do all these things. Can I ask you about how the language has evolved? And has PHP managed to maintain that kind of ease that you remembered? Is it still that joy?
Well, quick answer is I think totally yes. And but I will explain what I mean by that. So obviously the requirements to web applications has changed, and the expectations from of users' expectations from websites are totally different these days. The websites should be very dynamic and nice looking, and a lot of functionality is taken as given. So you like that website that I built back then for this conference, it was just like these days I wouldn't even use PHP. I would probably just create like static pages, I guess. But these days is very dynamic. But quick example, I had to vibe code a simple website just to
Yeah, it's not a new idea. That's what I think non-developers don't realize. It's like we've been, you know, half doing stuff since forever. It's not a new thing.
indeed. Right now I had to do this kind of the same thing, and I vibe coded with using Juni AI assistant of JetBrains to create this. I needed a simple demo application, and I used simple demo application that uses some API. So I was using, first I was like, okay, I will try TypeScript and some JavaScript framework for that. There are a bunch of those frameworks, and I tried Next.js, and then I tried some other framework, and honestly, it didn't feel simple, to be honest, for me. I mean, I understand JavaScript ecosystem a bit. I know how to navigate, but it didn't feel simple, and I wasn't able to get results real quick. So I was like, okay, then I will just do the same with Laravel. And it was, I got the result almost immediately. Not for the sake of this, like, Python chat or Django chat podcast. I tried actually doing the same with Python in PyCharm, but I used not Django. I used I think it's called Fast Plask? API, right?
Oh, Fast API.
Yeah. I used that, and I was able to get results real quick as well. So I really like that experience. So I mean, it's not just Laravel, but what I'm trying to say is that these days PHP experience is the same, as in it's very easy to build things. You don't need to do, you have simple blocks that you can reuse for simple applications, and then on top of that you can add your thing, and the ecosystem, like the number of packages and number of the things that people already created for you, and the quality of those things is amazing. So for example, if I need ORM, or if I need a library that uses a certain API in PHP, the quality is just so good. I can be sure that it's working, maintained. I'm super happy with the quality. With JavaScript, I guess maybe if you're very much in the JavaScript or Python ecosystems and you know some things better, maybe it's also the same experience, as in you know what to use and the quality is there. But at least with JavaScript, I felt like there are many things that are nice ideas, but not like deep enough to use it for something real. At least, I mean, I don't want to sound as an old guy here.
It's not.
But that was my, at least, feeling, my impression, of touching it.
But we all have our own impression, yeah. Right? And what I was what, you know, and it's not that, you know, one ecosystem is better than the other, one tool's better than the other. It's where is your happy place? And what I liked from your answer was you were like, I started PHP with this happy base. And my question was, did it maintain that for you? And the answer is yes, absolutely has, as it's grown.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. It has, again, I'm not like completely blind. It has its problems and we can talk about that as well. But it's definitely my happy place and I feel super productive with PHP and the PHP stack. And it's really easy to build applications really quickly with the PHP these days. So I'm super happy with how it evolved.
Okay. So I'm gonna ask one more question. I'm going to let Will get to his background because the other thing that I really remember was just the deployment story was just perfect. And it was, you know, the old joke was arsenic in a can of beer, right? You just put it up and it went. And it feels like something when, because it was built into Apache and because, you know, mod PHP, and it was just like, you know, just pick up the file and load it. There was no deployment story. Whereas once you move to a kind of application server and then you've got a reverse proxy, and it just becomes much more complicated. And so my other sort of question is, has PHP managed to maintain a good deployment story there, or did it follow the, is it very similar to say Python or Rust or a Ruby environment where you're running two applications and it can be a bit difficult to swap in place?
I think the answer to this question is maybe more complicated. So I think it maintained this simplicity for just deploying files wherever you want, like to a web server somewhere. And you can set up this web server however you like. It could be a shared hosting, or it could be a dedicated server, or it could be some cloud provider like AWS or Cloudflare, whatever. So in this sense, it's similar to other, I guess, web stacks. So it's quite simple still, but it's not that much different maybe from other stacks. Well, it was JavaScript. I guess you need the difference is that with JavaScript, usually you have some kind of transpiling compilation stage usually these days. So you have TypeScript or you have some other things. And so this thing, and also JavaScript model of running is that it's always running and it handles your requests asynchronously, where with PHP, the model is very simple, as in you serve the request and then you die. Simplifies things very much. So basically, think about it as a serverless by design. So it's a shared nothing architecture where it's, you serve something, you throw out the response, and that's it. So for simple applications like web applications or many APIs, it's so simple, and it simplifies things and it simplifies the development and the deployment as well. However, we see that many applications, they use Docker. And for Docker, again, I can say it's simple, but maybe it's a little bit different from JavaScript, again, because JavaScript comes with an HTTP server out of the box. I'm speaking about Node.js, it comes with a HTTP server. So you can kind of have an isolated microservice with no like additional web server on top of it, like Nginx or whatever. You can just have a microservice with JavaScript, and that's it. With Python, I don't remember, but you kind of have additional tools.
It's
similar.
Yeah, it's similar. You end up running like an application server for your Python application, and then you'll put a web server in front of that, so you'll have Nginx or whatever. And it's that extra complexity that kind of... Moving from PHP to Python, it was the one thing where it was like, no, this is much more complex.
Yeah,
it was, you know, just drag up FTP up your file and reload, and it was done.
Yeah, yeah. So I think with Docker is maybe PHP is slightly more complicated, but just a little bit, I would say, like because you always need this extra HTTP layer on top of it. If you want. So one of the ways to actually navigate this is there are like application servers and one of for PHP, and one of them is FrankenPHP. It's an application server built in Go language on top of Caddy web server. So, and this is now an officially PHP supported project, and it's supported by the PHP Foundation. And we see a lot of applications for this flow, and we assume that it's gonna simplify this kind of developments or this kind of flows for users. So it's not for all users, but we see that for many users it might simplify things. Yeah,
that's yeah. I heard tell of FrankenPHP on the on the grapevine. Yeah. It's the new hotness.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's really getting the momentum, and it's has a lot of like it gained a user base real quick, and we see many many PHP users, as in companies, using it in production. Very successfully. So that's why we kind of recognized it as a crucial project within the PHP ecosystem already.
And that kind of gives it a seal of approval, right?
So again, then... yeah. So it's an additional like approval, an additional signal to businesses that they can rely on it, so that it's going to be maintained. If any security issues come up, we will fix them in like... timely manner, and so it gives certainty and confidence.
Okay, I think that's a good good moment to segue into talking about the PHP Foundation and the work you do there. So I'll let Will.
I do want to ask about that, but I had one quick question just on web frameworks. Since you're neutral in that you're not from Laravel or Symfony, is it fair to say that Laravel and Symfony are the two dominant web frameworks for PHP these days?
Yeah, I would say so. We see that on the statistics, like PHP Storm statistics and in general surveys, we see that those two are most popular and dominant frameworks within PHP ecosystem. The other framework-ish is WordPress, which is not a framework per se. You can say it's a CMS, but in fact, it kind of works as a framework, if you think so. If you like think like deeply about it, it's because it gives you again this certain rules or guidelines how to build your applications and structure, and it comes with lots of tools built on top of it and extra packages built on top of it. So you kind of it's kind of as a web framework as well. So I would say these three platforms, we can use this word maybe just to not confuse people or not trigger the purists. It's platforms, the most dominant platforms within PHP community. So it's Laravel, Symfony, and WordPress. There are a few smaller players, smaller frameworks that have some maybe regional preferences. So for example, in United States, there's still CodeIgniter popular. Eastern European countries, there is a E framework. In China, there is it's called HyperF or Swole framework. It's another story. It's very popular in China. So there are some, other players, but on a global arena, we can say totally that's Laravel, Symfony, and WordPress.
Okay. And then if you had to, like if I came up to you at a conference and I don't know anything about PHP, how would you describe why one should use one of those three over the others?
So with the Laravel and Symfony, it's I would say they're very... similar in a way what you can achieve, and they both provide you like the way to build applications real fast because they have actually one thing that you may not know. Symfony is a framework that it comes as a set of packages, separate packages. Let's say Symfony console is a package to create like CLI commands, or for example there is a HTTP kernel, which is just an a layer of handling HTTP requests within Symfony. So the fun fact is that Laravel is built on top of those components. So is Laravel is like at least 30% Symfony under the hood. So they are very interconnected, and that allowed Laravel author to build his framework real fast because he reused Symfony components. So it's basically what I'm trying to say is that the quality will be very high on both. I think it's more about the taste, as in if you prefer maybe more strict standards, more nicer design and maybe less quick code kind of things, then you would prefer Symfony because it's, I would say, maybe more design-wise, more correct in all they, at least they tried to make it more correct in many aspects and reusable by other frameworks, as you can see. Whereas Laravel is, it's maybe leaning towards quick development. When you need to achieve results quicker. So it kind of cuts the corner somewhere. So it will be good for, let's say, 85% of stuff you're doing. Maybe if you're hitting this another 15%, it will be not so convenient and you will have to work around stuff. So I would say it's basically just a matter of your preference in terms of like code style or how you prefer building applications. So if you like kind of move quickly, roughly, I don't know, and then Laravel is your choice. And if you're like more strict design, then Symfony would be probably better. So in this regards, I don't know if so I'm into music production, and in music production there is these different tools as well. So there is Ableton, there is FL Studio, there is some other things. So I like to compare it as these tools for those who are into music. So FL Studio allows you to build stuff real quick. It's a little bit messy, but it allows you to build stuff real quick and get results real quick. With Ableton, it's more strict, but you can build good apps with both. It's just a preference of taste. With WordPress, I think there is a more concrete or more specific guide on when to use it. You use WordPress when you have very specific tasks. For example, you need to build a web shop, a very simple web shop. Then you would just go and use WordPress with WooCommerce because it's already there, everything available there with all the payment systems, all the delivery systems, integrations, everything is just built there. You just need to combine it real quick and that's it. Or for example, if you need just a blog, just go use WordPress. It does that real nicely. Basically, any task you may think for a blog, it's already done there. So you don't need to rebuild it. But if your requirements are not that clear or you're building something more or less new, then you would choose framework, not WordPress. And then you can, I think, you can be successful with either Laravel or Symfony. Just the style is the preference. And you can also, like, even if you use Laravel, the good thing is, again, you can use Symfony components for different things. They are very like reusable. So but it's not reusable actually, vice versa. So if you're using Symfony, you cannot easily use Laravel components, but you can, if you're using Laravel, you can use Symfony components.
That tracks with what many of my friends who are very big on Laravel and constantly saying, you know, why don't you have, you know, hosted deployment, why don't you have easy payments? A lot of them are consultants. So they hit that, as you said, that middle ground of it's not WordPress, it's custom, but it's, I don't want to say standard stuff, but it's not, you know, the 80-85% is exactly what they want to do and they can do quickly and it's powerful. You know, when you were talking, you know, Django, I teach to beginners, and one of Django's challenges is if somebody says, I want to have a blog and deploy it, Carlton and I would say, oh, Django is perfect, right? And it can be, but the reality is it takes more steps to build the blog than you would like. And you have to do a lot more learning that if you only really just want a blog, why would you bother when you could use WordPress or Laravel or something else. And that doesn't even get to the deployment story, which, again, it's possible, like I have books and talks on this, to deploy Django simply, but it's still not as simple as anything in PHP land or even in JavaScript land. So those are two big pain points for Django in particular. It's seen as, I think, more complex than it is because it is very customizable and you have the power to do anything you want. But that means it doesn't fit these quick use cases that newcomers often want to use.
Indeed. Anyways, yes.
Carlton, what were you going to say?
Well, I liked I didn't know that Laravel was built around large parts of Symfony. I guess I'd ask from your response there. Is it fair to say that maybe you could start with Laravel and then Symfony is something you could grow into?
It can be, yeah. But I think we don't see, at least I don't see these examples very often. Usually it's like religion. You just start with Laravel and you stick to it. And then, you just like it and you feel comfortable. So we don't see switching very often as in developers switching. But the businesses sometimes switch to one way or another. I think their motivation is mostly like how easy it is to find developers using this framework. And so they care about the results, not much about the technology.
Yeah, no, developers were very tribal, right?
Yes, yes.
That's buttondown.com, email software for developers like you. There are hundreds of email marketing software services out there, and they all pretty much offer the same thing. Collect and clean addresses, send out broadcasts or drip campaigns, get analytics so you can see what's resonating and what's not. Buttondown is designed to hook into the tools that you already care about. Everything from static site generators like Jekyll or Hugo to payment platforms like Stripe and Memberful. You can hook your site up to Buttondown with just a form element or a simple REST call. Write emails in Markdown and then get on with the actual work you're supposed to do. New customers can save 50% off their first year with Buttondown using the coupon code Django. And if you email support, they'll white glove migrate your existing subscribers and archives for free.
Okay, so PHP Foundation, finally, half an hour in, we can ask about it. So I didn't know that there was one until recently. I wonder, is that something you hear from people in other languages? And then that's a long way of asking, how did it come about, right? Because PHP obviously has been around for a long time. So I'd love to get the story of the foundation, but do you find when you introduce yourself to people and mention I'm executive director of PHP Foundation, do people know that that exists?
Well,
because people don't know about the Django Software Foundation, for example. Like most Django developers have no idea there's a nonprofit behind Django. I bet most Python developers also don't know about the Python Software Foundation. So I don't mean to put PHP on the spot here.
I think inside the PHP community, I think they mostly know about the PHP Foundation. Mostly, at least those who are just socially active, those who can see somewhere either online or at the conferences or events, they usually know about the PHP Foundation. They may not know the details, or they may not know that I'm the director, but they know about its existence. And then when I talk to other people in tech industry, they sometimes don't know even why it's needed. They say like, oh, but the language is free, right? And I'm like, oh yeah, it is. But how do you get like security updates? Do you expect people coming like back from their full-time job and fixing some security issues at night, or how do you expect the such a technology be maintained? And then I talk to them and they explain and they, oh wow, that's what you do. Okay, then they see the importance of these kind of foundations, and then they just realize there is a whole world about supporting the open source, which to them is like, oh, but this is free, right? It's just free. Take it.
Well, but so the question is, when they have that realization, do they get their checkbook out?
Well, yeah, it's more complicated, unfortunately. But sometimes it works. Yeah, sometimes it works. So with the Well,
but I mean, it's only, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's only 4 years old, right? It's only 2021 that the foundation existed. Correct. Is that right?
Even less. Yeah. So it's quite a young foundation compared to other ecosystems and languages. So almost all of them had these foundations, kind of. So when I talk to, for example, someone from the Python community or JavaScript community, I say, so it's like, let's say, Python Foundation or Python Software Foundation. Although there are differences, but they immediately understand what I'm talking about. And or Linux Foundation, which is also a big organization. So yeah, and it's the reason for that is that for a long time there was a commercial company called Zend, which kind of was the PHP company. That was actually in their model or the description, the PHP company. So PHP was developed by one developer, Rasmus Lerdorf, started, and then two students from Israel, Andy Gutmans and Ziv Soraski, they rebuilt the language, they rewrote it a few times, and they started this company Zend, which is the name is comes from their names, combined Ziv and Andy, so it's Zend, and they created this company, and they were developing PHP most of the time through the history, and like basically it was taken it worked as a main entity behind the language, and it was fine until it stopped being fine until this it was Zend company was acquired a couple times. So it was acquired first by Rogue Wave Software, which is some American company. I think they didn't know what to do with PHP, and many people left. And then it was acquired by Perforce, which is at least they know what is open source, and they kind of were doing better, but still they shrunk, and most of the people left the company, and basically it lost the influence and lost the manpower. Basically, it was just one. They paid one core developer, just one developer maintaining the language, and that's it. And then another developer was actually paid by JetBrains. So there were only two developers paid to work on PHP. This situation was bizarre, if you think about it. Like, 80% of the web was working on PHP. So many businesses relying on PHP, and only two people in the world are paid to maintain the language. That's it. So,
And I just want to mention, it's also in JetBrains was one of the two, because JetBrains has also been very generous to Django. And I know this because I was the treasurer of Django for a while, but I feel like most people have no idea about JetBrains' contributions to Django. I suspect most, even in the PHP world, would most people know that JetBrains funded half of the language for a while? I would guess not.
I hope some
maybe
of them know.
I hope so.
Yeah,
I hope
yeah,
so.
I hope, but yeah. But yeah, well,
like it's not Microsoft, you know, to pick a competitor of ours, you know, like it's not Google.
Yeah,
they're not doing it.
Yeah. So yeah. So JetBrains paid for half of PHP, and then there was a one of the PHP community and people, one of the developers, one of the core maintainers. He wrote a blog post where he said, like, hey, but do you know what is the bus factor of the PHP? And he said, it's two. Basically, there are just two of these people, and if bus hits them, then PHP is done, because they just have all the knowledge about the PHP. And, I realized that problem as well, so I reached out to this guy, and we started talking how to fix that. And we came up with this idea of the PHP Foundation. So I started talking to other people in the community, just to try to gather some people who are interested. And then that's the time when we knew that we found out that this JetBrains, this guy who was sponsored by JetBrains to work on PHP, that he's going to
leave basically PHP and JetBrains and go to Red Hat to work on LLVM. That was his another passion. And he was young. We knew that this would happen sometime. So we kind of expected it, but it's okay. So it was... But it's what I'm trying to say, that this news, it amplified everything with the PHP Foundation, and we had to act quicker. So what I did is I reached out to major PHP companies, so WordPress, Laravel, Symfony, Packagist. It's a company that is building package repository, sort of like PyPy, but for PHP. And and a few other companies. So I reached out to them and asked, hey, so this is the idea. We want something sustainable for PHP. Let's start the PHP Foundation. Just give us money and let's go. So I outlined the plan, and all the companies gave some money. Some of them gave more, like JetBrains and WordPress. Some of them gave less. There was enough money to hire a few developers. So what we did basically back then is we offered those who, we started like an application form, and those who already had some like history of contribution to PHP and wanted to do that basically as a paid work, we offered them contract, and it was four people at the beginning, I think. And they were like just part-time developers and at the beginning, and then slowly some of them went full time. Then we grew the team to 10 developers. So right now we are 10 developers, and some of them are part time, some full time. So this is what we achieved in almost four years. So it's a little bit more than 3 years. So I think it's quite impressive. And I think we started as a very young and very not ambitious organization, as in our goal was very humble and very, let's say the scope was very narrow consciously. So, okay, we were like, let's get money from businesses and pay developers to maintain language. Basically pay and spray and pray, as they say.
But that sounds like you could go from quite a narrow goal, which is keep the lights on essentially. We need to make sure that language is at least sustainable. And then when you're talking about, well, you've got 10 developers being paid, well, obviously that gives capacity to think about pushing forward and new exciting innovations.
Yeah. So absolutely, that's exactly what happened. So last year we received investment from German government. And that's when we decided, okay, we received the investment. So, and they give investment, it's not a grant. So they give money for very specific projects. And we were like, okay, so we can now be more proactive. We can plan projects consciously, maybe longer projects. And when we have this investment, and investment is great because it's basically a guarantee that we will have money for this project. Where with sponsors is always uncertain. We don't know, the sponsor can drop out anytime. With this investment from government, we knew that, okay, we will definitely have this money so we can expand the team and start this project. And we were very lucky to get this investment. And I mean, it was not just luck. It was a lot of preparation to
work.
Get it. But still, I think there is a lot of luck playing a role as well.
Last 10%.
Yeah. So, but we found developers to work on those projects. So we became less humble and maybe more ambitious. Trying to be not too ambitious, because again, we're not a commercial entity. We're a nonprofit, so we very much rely on sponsors. And sponsors, their business can change. Sometimes it goes up, for example, like with WordPress. So WordPress generously increased their amount of their donation to the PHP Foundation, which is super great. They were giving money with no questions asked from like first day. They were like, yes, this is the money, do it. And so Yeah, but some sponsors, their business changes for different reasons, and they stop sponsoring, and it's normal. So we try to be very careful with expanding, and even 10 developers is already quite a big team. So
it's massive.
Yeah, it's we are trying to not expand when we don't need to, just not to expand for the sake of expand. One idea we are thinking about right now is maybe work more just like project on project basis. So, for example, we have a certain feature idea or a certain project, then we can sponsor this project and sponsor people to work on this project specifically, deliver it, and then see what we need next. That works for things with a very isolated things. So, for example, one of the things we did is a security audit for PHP, and it was the first external security audit in a long time, at least in 10 years. And what we did is we found an agency, basically like penetration agency, security agency, and they analyzed part of the code base, not the whole code base, because our budget was limited, but part of the code base. They analyzed it and they provided a report, and actually they found a few severe security issues. It took us almost half a year to fix those issues, because those were very severe issues. The result is amazing. Like the developers were like, whoa, we didn't know we had these issues. So it was, I think was this is an example of a very nice project.
Okay. So blue skies, if you think the funding horizon is nice and rosy for the medium term, what are your kind of headline things that you'd like to really, if you could get those fixed or mad?
We have a really nice sponsors. We have a really nice community. People that are using PHP are very productive with PHP. So there are many companies that are using PHP that you might not know. For example, like before I met my girlfriend, I was actively using dating apps. And one of them is Bumble. And Bumble is a PHP company. So I was talking to them. They're very, if you think about it, their load is very extreme. They're very high load application. Their response should be very fast because people like swiping and doing stuff. Like the user base is insane.
No patience if it doesn't swipe quickly.
Right? Yeah. So, and they use PHP and they are super productive with PHP. And we like with our sponsors, we have many of those who are like, we're super happy with using PHP. Our business grows. It allows us to move fast. What I think is that people that are that used PHP long time ago when they started, their perception of PHP remained the same. So it's like that, like it was back then. So we are trying to change this perception, trying to show like, hey, you can do really cool things with PHP. I mean, of course you can do it with other languages, but if you already know PHP, you can, or you're one to move fast, or you have developers who know PHP, you can be very productive and very successful. And time to market is something that is very important these days. Like almost anyone can build anything, so you have to be quick, and PHP allows to do that. So that's, I think, one of our missions is to show people the modern PHP.
Okay, so get this. So your just a wish list item is to get the message out better.
Yeah. I think we're good within the PHP bubble. So people who use PHP are happy with PHP and they like how things go in and evolving. But people outside of PHP, they don't know much. So me coming to this podcast is also a part of the strategy, let's say.
Yeah, very good, very good. Yeah. We'll have to come and sneak into your newsletter with some genuine stories there. Yeah. What you've described is very similar to the conversation we have in Django all the time. You know, it's like you know, there are companies using it, exactly building great, exciting things. People inside the ecosystem are very happy with it. But how do we reach out beyond that? It's, you know, I think it's a standard problem, that evangelism message.
And something that you mentioned at the very beginning is Laravel marketing. And it's insane. So they are just really good at marketing. Yeah. So, actually, there are Taylor Otwell, who is the author of Laravel Framework. He built the framework just by himself. And there are a few podcasts that people can listen about. And he was talking about the marketing, how he was doing the marketing. And it's when you listen to that, you're like, but those are like very obvious things. Just, I don't know, build documentation, talk to your users, be where your users are, make your users happy, do the things that bring the most value and have the least effort, like simple things. And that's
they
it.
Still need doing, right?
Yeah, yeah. But the guy's really good at marketing, what can I say? And then they received investment, so they are now backed by Excel Venture Capital. So yeah, I guess they're super successful.
Well, fingers crossed it doesn't all go wrong.
In the Django world, we look a little bit, some degree of envy, but also just realization of, you know, an open source nonprofit versus, you know, taking VC money, and especially with, you know, one person in charge. So in the Python ecosystem, FastAPI with Sebastian, you know, he started that. He just took a bunch of investment, maybe from Excel as well, or Sequoia, I think. He also just raised a bunch of money. He's building a hosting platform similar to what Laravel has done. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I don't think you can say one approach is better than the other, but certainly Python and definitely Django, because there's 1.5 people paid to work on Django, like total. Carlton was one of these people for 5 years, you know, so it moves a lot slower than, you know, some of these other ecosystems. But on the other hand, it's been around 25 years. It does all these great things. There's not as much of a bus factor as, you know, Laravel, right? If Taylor, something happened to him, there is a community, but there's these risks. So anyways, yeah, when you deal with these, the technology, it always comes down to kind of the people and the business sides of it, of like, oh, how can they move so fast? And, you know, well, you know, you're the executive director of a foundation, right? It all comes down to people. And
absolutely, yes. I think one thing they did differently, Laravel. So he started with building commercial products around Laravel from day one. So basically he, as you said, he built this deployment tool and then other tools, and they were like paid tools. The framework was free, open source, and all the ecosystem around the framework was open source and free, but he built additional tools, and that allowed him to basically work full time on the open source, which for example with Symfony, they had different model. They didn't have company for a long time behind them. So I think it can work different ways, both ways, you know, like going fully open source and having commercial products. Both ways can work.
Money helps, though, right?
Yeah.
Money helps.
Well, I wanted to, does the PHP Foundation works with Open Collective? Can you talk about what that relationship is? Because Django, for example, doesn't, but it's something we look at and think about.
Well, when we were starting, we wanted to start as quick as possible and with as less hustle as possible, just basically do things. And the Open Collective, I was in contact with the E framework maintainer and author, and I talked to him and a few other people who use different platforms and for collecting money. And Open Collective had really great recommendations. So we started with the Open Collective. They basically work as an umbrella organization for different nonprofits. So you don't have to register your own entity or your own nonprofit to work with Open Collective. They take care of that for you, as well as they provide money money platform, basically platform to collect money. And we are very happy with both. One thing to mention is the fee, which is 10%, which is quite a high fee. In my opinion, especially for us, when our budget is almost $1 million per year. So it's the fees are quite big as well. We could, in theory, hire a person for that fee.
Yeah, extra developer.
Yeah, but on the other hand, they take care of everything for us. So all the contracts, everything, they take care of it. One maybe disadvantage in addition to money is that they provide you this non-profit, American non-profit entity. It has some code, which is
501(c).
Yeah, so, and it's not three, it's six. And the difference is that six was six. I don't know the details, but the difference is that with six, the organizations that are 501(c)(3). I forgot the numbers.
Yes, okay. It's 501(c)(3) versus 501(c)(6). I forget them too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So this the sixth one, I think it can do political stuff in the U.S. And this is why sometimes you cannot apply for different open source programs. For example, you cannot get Google Workspace for free with this kind of entity. But if you were 501(c)(3), then you can get. So this is difference. But for example, sometimes when we cannot apply automatically, I just reach out to these companies and I tell them about the PHP Foundation, and they're like, oh yes, okay, no worries, we can, of course, we are not a political organization, whatever. So just, yeah, for example, that worked with Slack, and Slack is a company built on top of PHP. I mean, they don't use PHP these days. They use a dialect of PHP called Hack, but it was built on top of PHP.
Yeah. I think, back in the day, Facebook had their own PHP. Was it like Pop something? Or I mean, that's what these big companies do, right? They...
Slack is using the dialect from Facebook. So basically, Facebook was built on top of PHP, but then at some point they built their own virtual machine for PHP called HHVM, okay. Hip Hop.
Yeah, you're right.
VM, and then they built their own PHP dialect called Hack, and then they split completely, and they said we cannot like support both anymore, so we will just focus on our own Hack language. And basically in the world, there are just these two companies using Hack. It's Slack and Facebook.
I mean, Instagram is famously in our circles built with Django, and there's still a sliver of it within Meta now, but they have their own version of Django, basically, where they swapped in different things and...
Do they contribute back something, or?
That is a good question. For 2 years when Mike Krieger, one of the founders, was still there, they contributed, I think, $25,000, and otherwise nothing. Correct me if I'm wrong, Carlton, on that.
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, the code has been branched away, so they haven't contributed back, but the work into Python core and into C Python. Coming out of Meta was based off that, based off Instagram's needs. So it's not, you know, it's not Django per se, but Python that's benefited from that usage.
Yeah. Well, Carl Meyer, some core Django people went to Facebook, worked on Python. So yeah, something. Could they do more? Yeah, they could.
Of course they could do more. They made 20-odd billion last quarter. They could do more.
I mean, this is a thing, you know, so we're both at JetBrains. You've been there quite a bit longer than I have. I feel like it doesn't thump its chest enough about how generous it is. I mean, I was the treasurer of Django. I saw how much money JetBrains was giving. It was a third to a quarter of the budget every single year. And nothing from any other company of size. You know, I mean... You were at JetBrains working on PHP Storm. Like, you know, I feel like JetBrains, I don't know if it's cultural or it's marketing or what it is, but I feel like the actual contributions far exceed these other companies with trillion-dollar market caps. But they, you know, we could do more to talk about what JetBrains does, because it on the ground does a lot for many languages and frameworks.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's 100% true. And we had, fun fact, like we had an internal conference inside JetBrains, and I was giving a talk about the work that I do for the PHP Foundation. And one of the marketing, top marketing managers, she was like, "We should talk about this more. We do so much for open source. We should talk about this more." So yeah. JetBrains like is very generous, and I think JetBrains could do much more of like just talking about that and speaking about that, because of course that could probably maybe help other companies to, you know, also do the same, or just convince them.
Nothing like setting a good example.
Yeah, exactly. There is actually this open source pledge program. It was launched by Sentry. So basically they wanted to encourage companies to donate to open source. And the rules that they have, I think you have they have like a certain threshold when you qualify for this kind of for their program. And unfortunately JetBrains actually doesn't qualify, because the head count of JetBrains is quite big, so although that they donate a lot, it's still so it's easier for like smaller companies to qualify for this, which is unfortunate, because it would be so for example, let me clarify. So for example, if Microsoft donates, let's say, to Python or to Django or to PHP, let's say 100,000, for them it's like 0.0001% of their revenue. So they don't qualify sort of for this program. But if, for example, a small company of three people donates 100,000 per year, that's for them like a lot. So I'm trying to say that this is a great program to raise awareness of the problem and just to make companies to donate. But it could be maybe a little bit better in kind of shifting towards big corporations donating to ecosystems.
Yeah, a linear scale is never going to work as you go up, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're coming a little bit up on time. I do want to mention, so people who want to learn more about PHP, you have a number of resources. You have the PHP annotated newsletter, right? We'll have a link to that. You have a YouTube channel.
Can I just bump in? I was looking at the newsletter in preparation for the show. There was an episode, an article you linked in the latest issue, which was about from PHP version 3 to version 8 and how it's evolved. And that was perfect for me, because I was like, I didn't know about what had gone into 7 and 8. And so I went back, I was like, oh yeah, I remember this. Okay, that was right. And that was a really good article. So yeah, we can link to that perhaps.
Yeah, indeed. That was a really good article. Yeah, I think it takes me a lot of time to prepare this PHP annotated newsletter, because it's handcrafted. So I go through all the news and read all the tweets myself. It takes a lot of time, but the result is that it's very concentrated, and I usually find things that are not available anywhere else. And I'm happy that it helps the community to stay to catch up on what happened in PHP world and not like read through all the noise. And I think there are a bunch of other resources out there. For example, for Laravel, it's Laravel News. It says their website. It's quite an interesting website, I think. For YouTube, I think there is a PHP annotated YouTube channel, which is made by our colleague Grant. It's a really nice YouTube channel about PHP and all things around it.
You have a YouTube channel. I mean, you talk about many things. I mean, I really liked your MCP server video.
Thank you.
We haven't even talked about AI in this talk, but you know, you and I on the ground, PHP Storm, PyCharm, all the or many of the JetBrains IDEs are now rolling out AI features. So yeah.
So with MCP, I was it was fun to discover that this the creator of MCP, he now works at Anthropic, but back in the day he used to be a PHP core developer, and he was a release manager of one of the PHP versions. Yeah, his name is David Suryapara. So I was I actually invited him to come to PHP is gonna turn is turning 30 years, so it's the birthday will be on June 8th. Yeah, so I invited David to come to the celebration to Amsterdam office. So we're gonna have a celebration party, celebration event, JetBrains office in Amsterdam. So we invited a bunch of different people from the PHP community to come to mingle, and we'll do some like online streaming event, just stream interviews and talks from them. And I invited David and a bunch of other people who are not in PHP anymore, but they used to be part of the PHP world. Unfortunately, he told me that he has a meeting with Bill Gates the same day, so. He couldn't make it.
Okay.
What an excuse.
Yeah, but I'm using PHP to build MCP servers. I tried both Python and JavaScript and Kotlin, but I was like, I really want to do it with PHP. And I found I really liked the UVX. So it's like a runner for PHP. For Python scripts, or it's super cool. I really liked it. So I built a small Python package that allows you to run PHP scripts or PHP packages with UVX. But basically what
this
it does...
This is the way.
Behind the scenes, what it does, it downloads PHP and runs PHP script. But it just works so fast, so smoothly. And I wanted my friends who don't have PHP installed, just by they do have Python, I want them being able to run my MCP servers easily, and so I can just give them one command and they can run it with UVX.
So UV's busy taking over the whole world and in Python, and so it's nice to see it doing the same thing over there as well.
Yeah
Yeah, that was the big, there was at PyCon US, which just happened, I think it was Charlie from Astral, so UV Rough, he had a sort of an open space, and it was unsurprisingly very, very crowded. They just released a type checker, I think it's called Ty. So that's another case of small group of people got some funding, doing really great stuff, rewriting everything, you know, from the ground up. And yeah, we've talked about UV on this podcast, but I think most people would not have assumed that a package manager could, you know, in a year do what it's done in terms of popularity. It seemed like an area that was just too difficult and too convoluted, and they just blasted through, and now they're kind of working their way through the Python ecosystem doing that.
Yeah, I love it. I admire it very much. It's such a nice tool, and you know, there are other people who may have, like, you know, take it for granted, like, okay, we have already a package manager. Why do we need another one? And it's impossible to build another one. But then they come and they just
can't. Yeah. It's that big pot of money.
Well, to be fair, they started without the pile of money. But yeah,
they did.
Yeah. So if people want to connect or see more, we'll put links. You have a personal site. You have a YouTube channel, PHP Annotated. People should obviously check out PHP Storm if they need an IDE. Follow you on the socials. We'll put links to that.
I'm quite active on Twitter and LinkedIn. I do have accounts on Blue Sky and Mastodon, but those are more like in a read-only mode. I reply to everyone, so feel free to reach out.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. We've had some scheduling issues getting this in because you've been very busy, but appreciate this. We had one of our first episodes was with David Hennemeyer Hansen from Ruby on Rails.
Oh, and nice.
So this is a tradition, and I hope every year or two to have someone from the outside come in and shed some light on, you know, what else is going on in the programming world.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it, and I'm happy to collaborate with the Django world and the Python world.
Great.
Thank you, Will. Thank you, Carlton.
Thanks again. So DjangoChat.com, links to everything in the show notes, and we'll see everyone next time. Bye-bye.
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 This episode was brought to you by Button Down, the easiest way to start, send, and grow your email newsletter.